We are recording.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen. Let me make this official.
We're professional.
Just because we quarantine don't mean we got to be unprofessional, Marcus.
It's because we got crying in the background. That's me, we're professional.
Young Simba said, let me get on the track. I got a hot 16. That nigga spitting. Literally.
Yes.
5, 4, 3.
You guys not allowed. Nah, I'm just kidding.
What time is it? Kingdom.
My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
Jordan is the most talented player in the NBA, by far.
The show of the 90s, the team of the 90s.
How you doing?
Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
We created an image that people want to live up to. I think that's all you can hope for.
Going on here.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, aka the world's most dangerous sports cast, aka iTunes' longest running weekly episodic sports show, produced and hosted by two or more African Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. Welcome back to week two of our special series chronicling our reactions to the ESPN documentary series, The Last Dance. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by the Pippen to my Jordan, or maybe I'm the Rodman to his Jordan. And he got to come. I mean, full disclosure, Marcus did have to come to my hotel room today and kick Carmen Electra out so we could do a show this week. So, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, Marcus. Marcus, the Detroit Pistons are still some straight-up bitches. Vandenberg, what's going on, brother?
What is up, Nate?
Oh, not much, man. Just hanging in here in this quarantine lifestyle we're going through. Before we get into the meat of the show, how are things holding up in the Vandenberg household out there in California?
It feels like we've hit the apex, and we're now sort of coming down on the other side of. You can sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel now. I think California is probably still another 30 days away, but
yeah,
you can at least see, okay, it's not as bad as it was, you know, a few weeks ago. And I think you gotta remember, this has all been only, 6 weeks? I mean, the middle of March.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing, yep.
And just to see, you know, the sort of the peak of this disease and then just some of the, I don't want to say solutions, but just some of the, I guess, ideas to try to slow this thing down. I mean, everything's happening so fast that I feel like, right.
Well, what are you alluding to, Marcus? You telling me you ain't drinking your Clorox smoothie?
Well, there is that too. Yeah. Oh, boy. Well.
Yeah, this man. Like, the audacity, Marcus, Vandenberg. And here's the thing. I didn't want to get political today, Marcus, but I got the news on in the background, and the president out here trying to force these cadets come back for this graduation just so he could say he could give his little ignorant commencement speech. It's like, where all the people that like to stand up for the rights of the troops now, Marcus, when the command in chief is putting these young men and women in danger by making them come all the way back to New York?
And in order to do this, 14 days in quarantine. It just sounds like this whole thing is just a nightmare for these cadets that now have to go through this process to
got to fly commercial. Like, like, come on, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with him, but I feel like if he's not trying to win the election in November, this is the way to go out.
Obviously, I don't want it to happen, Marcus, but let some of these troops get sick off of this.
Yeah.
There's going to be some consequences and repercussions.
Yeah. So,
because these folks in these red states might love them some Trump, but what they love even more than Trump,
the is troops.
The troops.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But yeah, Marcus, like, I think you're right. I think we're not on the downslope yet, but we like at the top of the roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we at the top of Splash Mountain about to go down and slide past all the animatronic racist cartoon figures.
Yes, yes, yes. You have to go through the racism on the way out because
yeah, we
got to
go through the racism. But yeah, I think I agree with you. Like, I think, you know, June, you know, maybe mid-June, like July at the latest, if everybody does what they're supposed to do, and that's a big if.
That's a big if.
If everybody does what they're supposed to do and doesn't go to the barbershop, shout out to Killer Mike, I think we're going to be all right, Marcus.
Yeah, and I think we just have to sort of be okay with wearing masks and keeping our space. And I think at that point, people will just be so happy to just get out the house that they'll fall in line.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, even though it'll be over, like, there will still be changes that have to be made. Like you said, people have to keep washing their hands, keep sanitizing, wearing a mask, you know. No, maybe not dap anybody up until January.
Yeah. Back to the head nods.
Yes, just head nods. but let's get away from this coronavirus talk, Marcus. Let's talk about Jordan fever, because that's the other illness that is taking over the world right now. Everybody obsessed with the Last Dance, the Jason Ayer documentary. I remembered his name this time.
There you go.
The Jason Ayer documentary on ESPN, part 3 and 4, aired this past Sunday on ESPN. Part 3, like you mentioned last week, was focused primarily on Dennis Rodman and the craziness that Dennis brought to the team. We heard from some of the Pistons, some of the Bad Boy era Pistons. And then episode 4 was about Phil Jackson and a lot of interesting stuff that people might not have known about the Zen Master. So, obviously, Marcus, you said last week you had seen all of these, but you are still watching along with everybody else. What did you make of, let's start with Dennis first. What did you make of episode 3, which kind of centered around the worm?
Yeah. Rodman's one of those, I'm going to call him eccentric players. And
it's putting him mildly.
I don't think we've seen many Dennis Rodman since then. I can't think of a guy that is on his level of, he was like a rock star off the court. And then on the court, he was, you know, probably the best rebounder ever.
Yep. I mean, one of the best defenders.
When you factor in his size and everything, I mean, he was just ferocious on the court. And then, you know, we didn't even touch on like the wrestling side of him, which endeared him to so many people. So yeah, he's just, and I saw it. I think Bill Simmons had this thing about how Robbins really wasn't that interesting. He was instead boring, but
really?
Yeah.
This is what we out here fighting about, Bill Simmons.
Yeah. So I paid that no mind. Yeah. This was heavily focused on Rodman. Not only his time in Detroit, but also some of his time in Chicago as well.
Did you watch the 30 for 30 they did just on Rodman?
I did, but I don't remember at all.
Yeah, because I think they showed it on the run-up when they knew that they were going to air The Last Dance starting in April.
Mm-hmm.
They replayed the Rodman 30 for 30 on ESPN probably about 3-4 weeks ago. And it was the first time I had seen it. And it's like, yeah, between that and episode 3 here on The Last Dance, you really get this interesting picture of this guy, Dennis Rodman, who at his core is probably just like a regular dude. Like, and I think Jackie McMullen came on, like, he was like talking about like he's an extrovert, particularly in those particularly in those Pistons days. But he's kind of worked himself into a shoot with this Dennis Rodman gimmick, the character of Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, I mean, he said in the documentary that he didn't turn into this person until he got to Detroit. I mean, and growing up and in college, he was not, you know, the Dennis Rodman that we have all come to know and love. So, yeah, he's living the gimmick, Nate.
Did you listen to the after show with Jalen Jacoby?
No.
Oh, man, because Jason Ayer comes on, and he tells this great story about actually recording with Dennis that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so Rodman. Like, keep in mind, Dennis had to agree to the interview before Jason Ayer and the crew, like, set everything up. So, obviously, Dennis is, like, an hour late, shows up in the convertible, hops out, goes into the hotel lobby where they're setting up the interview, and he walks up to Jason, and he's like, so what are we doing today? And Jason's like, we're doing the interview that you agreed to do last week. And he's like, okay, kill all that. Before we do this interview, I'm going to need a bottle of lemon tea, a smoothie, and a tuna sub from Subway. And Jason's looking at this dude like Negro. But obviously, you want to talk to Dennis Rodman, you gotta pay the piper.
This is his writer. You gotta, you know, live up to his expectations.
So he sends out the guy, and while they're waiting for all the stuff to get back, Dennis is like, I probably can only talk to you for like 30 minutes, bro. But they bring the tuna sub, they bring, you know, the smoothie and the water and all that, and the tea, and he sits down and actually gets Dennis Rodman to talk to him for like 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, half of the stuff we couldn't use because it was just Dennis talking about South Korea or North Korea. But the hour and a half that was actually good, we used it in the documentary. Just like, I can't imagine. Like, I talked to a bunch of people, Marcus, and I'm sure, you know, in your position, you've interviewed a lot of, as you would say, eccentric athletes. But I can't imagine trying to corral Dennis Rodman into a coherent interview.
Yeah, no, I've never had an interview where someone said ahead of time, you need to provide me X, Y, and Z before we talk. Like, that would be a no-go. But for this,
like, I mean, Subway was the deal breaker.
Yeah. Not even Jimmy John's, Subway.
Yeah. Like, Dennis, I know you probably blew through a lot of your NBA money, Dennis, but you can buy some damn Subway on the way.
Yeah. Rodman, and then they dive into, you know, the Pistons teams of the 80s, which,
yep,
you know, obviously featured Rodman. And then they talked about the arrival of Doug Collins to Chicago.
Yeah.
Collins was, I think, the guy responsible for unlocking another side of Jordan. Like, I think the fact that Collins gave Jordan the green light probably helped might turn into the killer that he was in terms of a score, but at the same time, the Bulls teams between 86 and 89 weren't actually winning.
Yeah.
And I think it was Scotty who mentioned that when Collins was gone and Phil Jackson came in, that the focus became more about the team as opposed to Michael. And Michael admitted that when Phil came in that he wasn't a fan of you know, Phil Jackson at first.
Mike had the great line. He was like, you know, Phil wanted everybody to touch the ball. You know, it's all about the triangles, all about ball movement. Everybody gets a chance to touch the ball. But I don't want Bill Cartwright touching the ball with 5 seconds left on the clock. And I'm like, he's got a point.
He's got a point.
But I liked it, though, because I think people maybe have this image of Michael in his head, in their head of, you know, he was kind of a coach killer, and that's why Doug Collins got the boot. But I liked how they showed like Michael and Doug actually had a really good relationship before Doug was let go by the organization. And, you know, the story where Mike's like in his first game, Doug Collins is just sweating and he's got like crap all over his face from drinking water. And Mike is like, you know, clean yourself up. I'm not going to let you lose your first game. And he goes out and scores like 10 points in the fourth quarter to win the game. And so I think seeing that side, and maybe again, this is what I think so many people are liking about the documentary, Marcus. We're getting to see Dennis and Phil and Scotty and all these other people, but at the end of the day, the star is still Mike, and we're getting to see a side of Mike that we really haven't seen before.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Mike was not a guy during his prime to be sort of transparent and open. This is sort of making up for his career, where he was, you know, not really, he didn't put himself out there. He was very protective of his image, and he knew sort of how he wanted to be viewed in the media.
And they showed it in the documentary, like when he interacted with the press, like he would say nothing, but he had a charisma about him. He had a charm about him. And so he's like telling you nothing, but everybody's laughing with him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Kobe was the same way up into the first half of Kobe's career. He was very much like Jordan. Like, he was very vanilla, very boring. And then I would say post-trial, for sure, he became, I think, comfortable being Kobe Bryant.
And Shaq is out of the picture, once the trial is over.
And he allowed himself to be vulnerable and to open up. And the second half of Kobe's career, like, from a media standpoint, he was great. Like, he was very much like a student of the game. He always had something interesting to say. And he did not take himself as seriously as he did in the first half of his career.
In particular, like, I liked, like, the last 3 years of Kobe's career, where he's like old man Kobe. Mm-hmm. And he's just, like you said, he's being open. He's saying stuff that he normally wouldn't say. I think that time period is when he did, like, the Kobe system commercials, which were, like, hilarious. And again, he's allowing us to see more of Kobe than we had before. And so when we see, like, Michael, like, finally, I think that's the thing, Marcus, when somebody gets to a point where they feel like, I don't have to prove anything to anybody anymore, and it's crazy that it maybe took MJ this long to be like, I don't care what anybody thinks, this is what I'm going to say, you know, for him to be this open and to be this honest, I think that's been the thing I really enjoyed the most about The Last Dance so far. It's like, because you wouldn't have gotten, you know, we talk about the Bad Boys, one of the favorite scenes in the 2 hours, and it's already become a meme, is Isaiah Thomas talking about when the Pistons didn't shake the Bulls' hand after the Bulls finally climbed the mountain and beat them to get to the NBA Finals, and they show, like, Jason Ayer, to his credit, has done this great gimmick of showing the other people in the documentary what Michael's saying or what, you know, Scottie's saying, and getting their reactions, and Jordan just looking at Isaiah Thomas trying to finesse his way out of the question, and Jordan just looking at him like, Negro, please.
Yeah, the Isaiah Jordan beef still in 2020.
Still, to this day.
To this day. There's one more great scene later on with Jordan Payton, where similar situation where it's Jordan reacting to what Gary Payton had to say. And I don't think Jordan's hate towards Gary is as IT levels, but it's
right.
It's up there. So yeah, he knows how to get a reaction out of Jordan, which is great.
He's really good. Like, he's I'd never heard of this guy before. Like, I knew he did the Fab Five, but it didn't connect in my mind. Mm-hmm. But like, he's really good.
So yeah, that takes us to the shot in Cleveland.
Yes. Well, real quick, I want to stick with the Bad Boys for a second, Mark. Uh-huh. Because you brought up Isaiah, and I think for a lot of people, especially younger people, this might have been their first time really hearing from one Isaiah Lord Thomas III. How do you think he came across in this documentary? Because if Jerry Krause was the big villain in week one, I think Isaiah took that top heel spot this past week.
Yeah, Isaiah is a guy, or a player, I should say, that you either love him or you hate him. Like, there's no middle ground. And I think that applies to the Bad Boy Pistons in general. Like,
and
in that sense, there are a lot of people that hate the Bad Boy Pistons. They're not, unless you're from Detroit, I don't think people were rioting with, you know,
unless you're Jamel Hill or Jalen Rose.
Yeah, like, the same with when they were showing the Jazz highlights later on, like, nobody was rooting for Utah Jazz outside of Utah. Like, that's not a bandwagon team as a kid. So I think Detroit's in that same boat, where you got to be from Detroit or maybe from Chicago and have some Isaiah Thomas connection to really, really root for them. And, Isaiah, to his credit, has not been shy about discussing all these things prior to this. And I think that doesn't even factor in the stuff with the Knicks and that whole front office situation. Like, there are things that have happened that, you know, I could see why people would be out on Isaiah.
Didn't Isaiah run, and I might be misquoting CBA. Or misremembering, Marcus. I would say, didn't he run the CBA into the ground?
Yep, he did.
Damn. But yeah, like, and I think just the look, Marcus, like Isaiah, the aesthetic of looking at him, like everybody else is just kind of casual Friday gear. Mm-hmm. Isaiah's out there with his best Easter Sunday suit, lean back on the couch. Just, I don't know why Michael would have a problem with me. You know, we were just playing hard like everybody else.
I mean, Isaiah and Magic had beef. Like, it's not just Jordan. Like, there was there was a time when those two didn't get along.
Yep. My favorite thing, I will give Isaiah credit, though, because everybody was like, I think it was Judd Bushler that was like, you know, when the Celtics lost to the Pistons, they shook everybody's hand. And Isaiah Thomas brought receipts. And he's like, no, I had to get Kevin McHale and shake his hand myself. And so that was the one bit of credit I appreciate, because at least Isaiah was telling the truth about that one instance.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the Pistons are that's sort of been attached to their legacy, but it was before the Pistons' time that was happening. And, you know, handshakes, I don't think were as commonplace as they were now. It's just...
No.
You know.
After the Bulls-Pistons series, like, that became a thing. Where it's like, yeah, everybody got to shake hands now.
That doesn't bother me that, you know, that didn't happen. I'm more offended when players, LeBron, walk off the court before a game's over. Like, that, I think that is sort of like showing up the other side. But if you've gone through the 7-game, like, I don't expect it to be hockey where, you know, the big thing in hockey after the series is to do the handshake and the inner set of the ice.
Everybody lines up.
Yeah, you don't see baseball players doing handshakes.
No.
Football players don't do handshakes, so I don't know. I don't know why the NBA has now became the sport where, you know, you have to show this level of respect after a series.
Because these kids are soft, Marcus.
Well, half of them are friends with each other now anyway, so.
I was going to say, half of them friends got the same agent.
Yeah.
Hang out on banana boats. But one man, and you were getting ready to go here, Marcus, one man that did not have a banana boat was that man, Craig Elo.
Yes. Craig Elo, who is not featured in the documentary.
He didn't want that smoke.
But his teammate was.
Yes. Ron Harper would, again, like, I think that's probably one of the best things about this is you get genuine reaction, and it's genuine unedited reaction, right? Uh-huh. Like, people is cussing. I saw Vernon Maxwell had a great quote on Twitter the other night. He was like, I can't even watch it. He was joking, but he was like, I can't even watch this anymore. It's so much foul language.
Y'all coming from that tour, yeah.
Yeah. But like, yeah, just like you get Ron Harper saying that putting Elo on Jordan instead of him is just like okay, whatever. That's some bullshit.
Yeah. Harper tells a story about, you know, leading up to the shot. And he does not mention Lenny Wilkins by name, but we will mention his name. Lenny Wilkins, who was coaching the Cavs, decided that he wanted Elo guarding Jordan. And Jordan even admitted, say, Ron Harper did a better job of guarding me. And Harper tried telling Lenny Wilkins, yeah, I got MJ. And Wilkins told him, no, like, Elo's got him. And his quote was, I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever, fuck this bullshit. And what do you know? Jordan makes a shot over Craig Elo, and you know, that is sort of the start of Jordan's career. And then, unfortunately for Ron Harper, not because of the shot, but I think people sleep on Ron Harper as a player up until this point. Like, he was a legit, you know, he was going to be a star in Cleveland, and then injuries caught up with him, and he ended up going from Cleveland to the Clippers after this, and then ended up eventually back on the Bulls with Jordan. But,
To be fair, I think Lenny Wilkins actually did Ron Harper a favor. Because Lenny is such a great coach, Marcus, that he knew. He knew whoever I put on MJ, Jordan about to score on this man. Yeah. I'm not going to do that to my brother, Ron Harper. Craig, come over here real quick. I want you to guard MJ because he knew somebody was about to get put on a poster.
Yes, and Crazy Little Forever will be
forever,
forever, ever.
I think again, both of these nights were, both of these parts of the documentary were really great. And you're right, Marcus. Like it did pick up speed. And like we even got left with a cliffhanger at the end of episode 3, where Dennis is headed off to Las Vegas on his vacation. But then I think episode 4 might have been my favorite because of all the people involved in this story other than MJ. I think Phil is the one I wanted to hear the most from.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of Phil in episode 4. Obviously, you being a Lakers fan, Marcus, you know about that man, Phil Jackson. What did you make of how Phil came off in this documentary, particularly part 4?
I think you see why players sort of, I would say, gravitate towards Phil and why he's been able to gain the respect of, I mean, when you look at some of the egos he's had to coach in Jordan, mm-hmm. and Kobe, and Shaq, and Pippen,
Rodman,
like he's coaching. That is, you know, that is a hard thing to do to manage personality. Like, I think the hardest part about managing for me is just you're trying to manage personalities and you're managing people that are different, and you can't manage, you know, each person the same way. So the fact that he was able to find a way to get the respect of these guys and manage them on top of, you know, the coaching job he did to win all these titles, it's just, you know, it's remarkable. And I think some of that is just you get a sense of Phil's personality here and sort of what drives him and what centers him. And I think it's sort of, you know, when you add it all together, it made sense why he you know, he's the way he is.
Yeah, I've always liked Phil, Marcus. I liked him better before he shaved off the mustache, because now he just kind of like when he went through that period with the Knicks, I think that was just a bad look all the way around when he shaved off the mustache. And it's a shame that one of his last kind of public acts as a coach was getting into that thing with LeBron and Mav Carter, because Phil didn't really mean it like the way it came off.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think Phil Jackson is really interesting. I didn't know, like, I knew he was from Montana and he was kind of this hippie-ish dude, but I didn't know like his parents were missionaries or whatever. And he mm-hmm. was, he grew up on an Indian reservation and like he coached in, what was it? Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Like just all this crazy stuff. I didn't know Jerry Krause was like the hookup for him to get to Chicago in the first place.
Yeah.
Which makes like their falling out even that much more tragic. Cause it's like, come on, that's your boy. Like, y'all can't, like, you brought this man in, but now you don't want to pay him what he's worth. You don't want to, you know, give up the credit.
After winning 5 titles. Not like you brought this guy and he didn't win. He won 5 titles at that point.
And yet still. This isn't Fred Hoiberg here.
No.
Who was that? This ain't Tim Floyd we talking about. But, yeah, I like Phil, man. Like, I thought the story he told when he first met Dennis, and he's like, you know, Dennis was being Dennis and didn't want to look him in the eye, and Phil just like, hey man, look me in the eye, let's go outside and talk. And they got into all this talk about like Native American culture and everything, and it's like, yeah, Phil, you can obviously say that Phil won a lot of championships because he had a lot of the best players, but what championship coach didn't have 1 or 2 All-Stars on their team? You know, what mm-hmm. championship player didn't have a championship coach didn't have Hall of Famers on their team. So I don't think you can really put that on Phil. But to your point, Marcus, what makes Phil one of the greatest coaches ever is not the triangle. It's not the X's and O's. It's being able to manage egos, being able to manage people and put guys in the right place to succeed. And you know, he knew, like, yeah, Dennis, this doesn't make no sense, but Dennis needs 2 days off or a weekend off to get his mind right.
Yeah.
So let's get this together and let's give Dennis this time off. You know, he knows I got to get MJ to buy into being a more team oriented player. So how do I do that? You know, and so you see kind of already the greatness of Phil Jackson. And I don't want to go as far as to say Phil's underrated, but I think he might be underappreciated as a head coach, Marcus.
I should say that. I mean, he's had what, 9 rings?
Which is, yeah, like. Was he second only to Arbach or Case?
Arbach.
So yeah, yes. Like obviously one of the greatest, you know. So like yeah, Phil Jackson is so good, Marcus. If I had a team, Phil's like 70 by now.
Phil is 74.
Phil's 74. I would still be like, all right, Phil. All you got to do is coach home games.
I shorted him rings. I'm sorry, 11 rings.
Okay, Phil.
Yeah, five in LA, and
yep.
Six. I mean, that's just, you know, considering he won in a stretch of, I guess, from 91 to 2010, so almost two decades, you know, 11 titles. That's.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unheard of.
Like, I was still how I feel today, man, if I were an organization.
I don't think Phil wants to go back. I think he's very happy living out in North Dakota, wherever he's living.
Where North Dakota, Montana, wherever he's living, it's a weed friendly state.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yes.
Did you learn anything about Phil? You know, obviously knowing, you know, you followed the dude for a while. Is there anything that you didn't know about Phil that you learned through the documentary?
I wasn't aware of the Puerto Rico background and sort of how he got his coaching start. And I also sort of wasn't aware of the sort of how the triangle came to be with Tex Winter and Doug Collins wasn't really feeling it.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know like how they got Doug out to paint like that.
Yeah, and Phil the whole time was, you know,
bad for Doug Collins.
I forgot what the question was, but you could tell he didn't want to go into it.
Yeah, I think Aaron was like, so did you have any hard feelings about the way that Phil Jackson got the job and you were moved out of Chicago? And Doug's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know Doug's still mad about that.
Yeah, he's still a little salty, but.
Like, nigga, I could at least have one title. Like, I might not have won six, but I would at least got you one.
So, yeah, they explained how this entire time Phil Jackson was sort of studying Tex Winter and. When it became his time to coach the Bulls, he was already tight with Tex and sort of was all in on the triangle. And that sort of, you know, took the Bulls to the next level.
Yeah. And we get like all these cool montages of the Bulls set to some great music. I think when they finally beat the Pistons to get to the finals against Magic and the Lakers, they went with a cool Mo D, How You Like Me Now, which was... Mm-hmm. Which was great.
We got some Prince in this episode.
Yeah, we got a Prince Party Man.
Party Man.
Like a cut from the Batman 89 soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like that's not the obvious Prince cut to go with when they were doing Mike All Hail the New King in Town.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Beastie Boys with Rodman. Like a deep Beastie Boys cut. When they were highlighting Dennis Rodman. But I think my last thing about Phil is, and I didn't know I missed it until I saw it on the documentary, Marcus, but there's a moment where the Bulls are on the plane, and I think it's after they beat the Pistons, and they're talking about Denver winning the Super Bowl, I think.
Yes.
And Phil's reading the newspaper, and he's like, oh, the AFC finally won one. Looks like things are changing. Obviously alluding to the Bulls getting to the finals. And it's just like the sight of an old man reading the newspaper on an airplane. Like, I miss new physical newspapers, Marcus.
Like, made my heart warm.
Like, the only people that read newspapers today are old, like 55 and older.
I get the Sunday paper, which half the time I don't even open.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, it used to be when I traveled, if I was at the airport, I would buy the newspaper and read it. Those days are gone.
In the hotel, you get that complimentary USA Today.
Yeah, those days are gone too. You know, if I enjoy the New York paper, so if I'm back in New York, I'll get the tabloid, so the Daily News or the Post, because they're funny to me. And they're easy to read on the train because the tabloids are not, you know, traditional paper. So... But outside of that,
yeah,
everything's online.
I think like our generation, Marcus, might have been the last, particularly thinking about sports, like the last generation to actively be into the newspaper like that. Because like you said, the internet came along, you know, when we were in high school and maybe a little bit before that. So everybody that came up after us, they're getting all their information from AOL, a CompuServe, you know, they Alta Vista, you know, Yahoo, you know, Google. Like they're not on they're not reading the USA Today sports page. Or I don't know if you remember this. It was like there used to be this one sports paper. It had to be like early 90s, maybe around this time, maybe around the time of The Last Dance, called The National.
Yep.
And it used to have like baseball, football. I used to love The National. Here's how much I love The National, Marcus. I used to have to walk to school when I lived out in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to I walked from my Navy housing to Pacific Beach High School, and there was a little stretch, like a little strip mall, that had like a comic shop, a bike shop. I think Conti's bike shop had a Jack in the Box at the corner, and then there was like a row of newspapers. And I can say this now because the statute of limitations passed. But whenever I had free change, spare change, I was 7-Eleven too, because I spent many hours being late to school playing Street Fighter. But there'd be times when I didn't have change in my pocket and I couldn't buy the National, Marcus. So what I had to do, I'm not proud of this, Marcus, but I believe it has made me the sports broadcaster I am today. I would go up under the newspaper, and if you could slip your hand just in the right spot under the machine, you could slide a newspaper up out under there. And at least on two or three occasions, I got a free copy of the National on my way to school.
The National lasted all of 18 months, unfortunately.
Wow. That was like, what, 93, 94?
No,
1991. Oh, damn. Yeah. Because, that would have been before we moved back to Virginia. Yeah.
And do you know who wrote for the National?
Is it somebody we've talked to on the show?
No. But, I mean, someone that you are familiar with.
Because I was going to say Mark Spears. I was going to give Mark a shout out.
No.
It's Uncle Tony.
Tony had an offer, but he did not take the offer to join them.
Wilbon?
Nope. Dave Meltzer.
Dave Meltzer?
Yep.
Would he do boxing or UFC? UFC wouldn't have been around then.
1990, that would have been pre UFC. Maybe he did wrestling. I don't know. But he worked there.
Wow.
Lupita worked there. Jay Mariotti.
Where were they based out of?
I want to say New York.
Okay. Yeah, because it was like they got all the hot writers at the time.
It was Frank DeFord, who's a legendary SI writer. Yep. But it did not last very long. So
I'm surprised that it was good. Maybe it was just too expensive, and it didn't.
It was very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah, you paying all those people. Like, Dave Meltzer don't come cheap. I didn't know that. I didn't know Dave Meltzer wrote for the National. But, yeah, because it was. I mean, even if you looked at it, Marcus, it was super high-end. Like, the graphics, I'm sure that didn't come cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they did highlights for, the NBA playoff series, they'd have, like, the graphic where they've got every position and strengths, weaknesses, and subs and tendencies, and it was ahead of his time. So RIP to the National. But yeah, I remember I got caught one day by the guy at the bike shop. He's like, "Hey man, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, I dropped my newspaper and I had to get it."
Oh.
And then he's like, from under the machine, I'm like, "Yeah, the wind blew it underneath the machine." And then he's like, "Are you stealing that newspaper?" And at this point, you know, I'm a teenager. So, like, I don't have time to go all Law and Order with you, sir. So I just kind of get up, look at him, and sprint and run down the block. like that gif with Dave Chappelle in the Black Bush sketch. It's like, it's time to go. But, yeah, like, I stole my fair share of Nationals. But maybe that's why they went out of business.
You weren't putting your share in.
My bad, Lupica. But yeah, any other thoughts before we do a quick preview of next week's, because they did show the preview. Any thoughts on episode 3 and 4 of The Last Dance?
The Rodman thing, I mean, I can see giving a guy a night off, but still expecting him to be in the arena, but to give permission for this guy to go to Vegas during the season.
Right.
And then for him to not show up on time coming back, I mean,
I love when they showed Rodman, Michael saying, I kept telling Phil, you're not going to get this dude back. And Dennis is just there laughing.
That was very much like the Rich James back and forth on Chappelle's show. It's just like, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Dennis is a habitual line stepper.
Yeah, he line stepped, all right. And Jordan had to go to Vegas. I'm sure Jordan had to, you know, he was very hurt about going to Vegas and passing by all those blackjack tables. He took on for the team.
Calling a lecture, hiding behind the couch, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's... I can only imagine what that hotel was looking like.
Man. Probably a lot of substances just spread around.
Yes.
But yeah, like for me, Marcus, I thought... Like, I liked the first week, but like we talked about on the last episode, I felt it got a little slow at points.
Mm-hmm.
But this was all, like, this was everything I was here for. You know, I was here for the crazy Dennis stories. I was here for the beef between Michael and Isaiah. I was here for Horace Grant, like, calling the Pistons bitches. Like, I was here for all, like, I'm excited because, like, the first two episodes were solid, but these two were really good. I think people enjoyed them. Like we saw again, Twitter had a field day talking about all the great clips and the great quotes out of these episodes. And then we got the preview, Marcus, for next week. We got the preview for episode 5, which we get the Michael Kobe interaction that you mentioned last week.
Yeah, there's a lot going on episode 5. I would say the first 10 minutes are Kobe focused, including an interview with Kobe that was shot, I think, a week before his death this year. They also will talk about how Jordan ended up at Nike, which is an interesting story. They talked about the 92 finals, which is the Strut game, and you know, the story behind that and who Jordan was actually strutting at when he did the Strut. And then we get into the Dream Team, which will be, I think, you know, if we people get weren't
more Isaiah shade.
Yeah, I think this is where the Isaiah babyface turn happens, because I think you're going to feel bad for Isaiah at this point, and you're going to be like, what did this man do to you that, you know, made you this petty to freeze him out?
Is this also where we get introduced to Tony Kukoc?
Yes. There's a lot. Okay. Yeah, we get the Kukoc story and why Pippen and Jordan despise this man. And then we also talked about the infamous quote that was attached to Jordan about Republicans buy sneakers too.
Yes. Yep.
I didn't know the backstory behind that, so that was interesting to learn about.
Okay.
So that's all episode 5. And episode 6 I thought was a little slower. But they do talk gambling in episode 6 with Jordan.
So is 6 the one that's kind of focused on him leaving? Or is that a different episode?
6 is focused on the 93 season. So before he left.
Okay.
So yeah, the gambling talk. They talked about the Jordan Rules book that Sam Smith put out and how, you know, because Jordan has some feelings about that, because of course. And yeah, I don't have a lot of notes for episode 6. Maybe I don't know what it was, but 5 have a bunch of stuff in it. 6.
Okay.
Not so much, but yeah. So yeah, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm going to have some thoughts on episode 5, especially if they out here dogging my man, Tony Kukoc.
It thought I'm good, man.
Like this man went through a national strife and war to get to the NBA, and you want to disrespect this man?
Yeah, he's seen some things.
Like that's another thing, man. Like it's tied to it, but not really. Because after the documentary, I went on ESPN Plus because I still wanted to get my 30 for 30 fix. So I watched The Two Brothers, which was the one about Vlade Divac.
Mm-hmm.
And my other man, Drazen.
Yes, Petrovic.
Drazen Petrovic. And Tony Kukoc was in that one, too. I watched that one. But then the other thing I watched, Marcus, and it's crazy because, you know, you talk about Kobe and how he kind of evolved later on in his career. One of the coolest things I think Kobe did was the Detail series with ESPN. And I was like, they got a detail up with Steve Kerr and Phil Jackson talking about the triangle. And then they had the audacity, Marcus, to put a detail out with just Dennis Rodman. Like, not with Phil, not with Kerr. It's just Dennis talking about Dennis. And my man is up here because, you know, Dennis is all over the place. He's like, all right, right here, I'm going for the rebound. And then you see right there, I know Michael's in the corner, so then the triangle is right there. But then the triangle, you got three sides on it, so I got to be here, and Scott Burrell's over here. But then Scott Burrell goes over there, and so now it's only two sides, so it's not a triangle anymore. I'm like, they really got – and it's like 15 minutes long, Marcus.
Oh, man, that's too long.
Like, it's too way too long. But, yeah, detail with Dennis Rodman, at least watch like 5 minutes of it because I think he knows what he's talking about. But his brain is so gone that it just doesn't. Yeah, it's out there. But real quick, Marcus, before we leave this week, The Last Dance wasn't the only thing that took place on the ESPN family and networks this past week. We also had an NFL draft. The NFL draft at home with Roger Goodell getting virtually booed from all various nice locations. Obviously. As most people thought, Joe Burrow went number one, going to the Bengals. The Redskins got Chase Young. And then the Miami Dolphins. Maybe this is a start of a new era in Miami, Marcus, as the Dolphins got that man Tua.
Roll Tide.
Was Nick Saban the winner of draft night?
Well, LSU had more players. I mean, LSU, I think, they tied for the most players drafted in the draft of Ohio State with, I think, 14.
Yeah, it was a good night for Ohio State, too, especially, like, the top three all were at Ohio State at some point.
Yeah. I think that was the eye-opening part of this draft, at least early on, was that if you're attached to one of these major programs, like, you're in good shape for the next level. And on the flip side, if you're someone like the USC, who was once on that tier, they only had two players drafted, and for the first time in, like, gotta be, I think, maybe 50 years, they had no defensive players that were drafted this year, which I think that shows you how much USC has fallen from, you know, the school that had the most first-round picks to now. They're two picks overall and no defensive players for a program that was once known for their defense.
Hence why a certain top level quarterback in their own backyard is on his way to Tuscaloosa. sorry about your damn luck.
Roll Tide.
What were there any big surprises for you, Marcus? Because I, full disclosure, I watched the first night. I forgot about the second night, and then caught back up on Saturday. But were there any big surprises? Are there any teams that you think were immediately helped through the draft?
I thought the Ravens had a great draft. Getting J.K. Dobbins, which
that ground game is going to be ridiculous. Dobbins, Ingram, and your boy Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, they already set all types of rushing records this past season, but now you've added, you know, this great college running back in J.K. Dobbins.
Yep.
So that they had to draft. They also drafted Patrick Queen with their first round pick from LSU. Who else? I thought the Rams had a decent draft, considering they needed some. They had some holes to fill with Todd Gurley gone. They drafted Cam Akers out of Florida State, who, depending on who you believe, was probably hurt by the Florida State line as opposed to himself. So we'll see what he can do in the NFL.
Speaking of hurt, what did you make of your boy Jalen going to Philly?
Yeah. That was a surprise. I saw Adam Schefter float the theory that teams are worried about the coronavirus and they want to have a solid backup quarterback in the event that the starter did sick. I don't have an issue with Jalen going that high. I have an issue with Jalen, with the Eagles spending a draft pick that high on Jalen Hurts when you invested all this money in Carson Wentz. You know, I think that was, if it weren't for the Jordan Love pick, which we'll talk about in a second, I think that would have been the most head-scratching quarterback selection of, like, you know, what are you doing? But
I like the fit in Philly. I don't like him going that high, though. I don't like him going that high for the Eagles. But yeah. I think Doug Peterson's a good coach for him to kind of learn under. But I don't know if, again, like you're right. Like, if you're the Eagles and you got all this invested in Wentz, is a backup quarterback top on the list of your priorities?
Yeah. Did you see who else they signed, by the way?
No.
A quarterback? Khalil Tate.
Oh. See, I thought you were going to say somebody like man Cam, but speaking of quarterbacks that got signed.
Oh, man.
Jameis Winston is now a New Orleans Saint.
I don't get this move because the Nets, they gave all this money to Taysom Hill.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So I don't know. I guess if you're looking at the long game and you're looking at this might be it for Drew Brees.
Yeah.
That you then have two guys who could, in theory, compete for the job, but really it's one job. It's Jameis. I mean, Taysom can't throw. Come on. So
I like it if...
If he's going to learn from Drew Brees, exactly. Then I like it.
If Brees and Peyton coach him up, I think this could actually be a good thing for Jameis.
Yeah.
And he got the new eyes, Marcus. He got that LASIK.
He can see it, yeah.
Jameis about to come out here after Drew get his farewell tour. Jameis gonna be out here like the black Drew Brees. Like y'all should have never gave up on Jameis. He's gonna be accurate.
Yeah, we'll see.
30 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Maybe the lack of fans in the stands will help him with his accuracy. Less things to focus on.
Yeah. Before you talk about Love, Marcus, do you think it's interesting that Cam hadn't been signed yet? Because my theory is still out there, Marcus, and I hate to say it, because this is going to make me mad if Cam Newton ends up a New England Patriot.
I think the Cam thing is probably... I think Jameis has come to terms with being a backup, and
yeah,
I'm sure they probably told him, "Hey, look, you know, Drew might be gone, so if you play your cards right,
we need a new Teddy Bridgewater."
Yeah, Jameis. I mean, you know, I'm sure in his head he's not wanting to back up anyone.
Oh, Cam.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Cam. Yeah, so I'm sure he's had some offers of signing as a backup, but if he wants to be a starter.
The Saints actually wanted Cam before they went Jameis, and Cam's like, nah, I'm good.
So
I'm not going to go in division to be a backup.
Exactly. So we'll see how long he wants to continue to sort of, you know, aspire to be a starter. At some point, though, I think he will get signed. This won't be a cabinet situation.
No, I don't think so either. I think, honestly, if I'm Cam, there's no rush. Because I think you want to, A, ain't nobody really playing right now. But B, I don't think you want to lock yourself into a situation and there's a better one out there if you just sit back and look. you know, because we don't know. You know, if the season does get started, we don't know how Haskins is going to be in D.C. We don't know, you know, maybe your man Wentz gets hurt again and Jalen Hurts isn't ready. Mm-hmm. And, they, you know, Cam can sign somewhere for a year and get the mojo back and then get that big deal the following year. Again, New England, like, I don't really believe they're trying to go out. Bill Belichick trying to go out here with Brian Hoyer and Jarrett Stidham.
Hey, man, it's a system. It's not the quarterback. He's been telling us.
But, I mean, look, maybe signing Cam would be a way to balance out the white supremacist kicker that they drafted.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't realize that, you know, what the tattoo would mean. So, again, this guy got drafted, but Kaepernick not signed. Okay.
I mean, he might be a white supremacist, Marcus, but at least he stands for the anthem.
Yes.
So, real quick, any thoughts on your man Love? Because I know you brought him up.
I was not high on Jordan Love in college, and I was, you know, if you're Aaron Rodgers, you got to feel some kind of way about this move.
I don't know what Green Bay's doing. It feels like the last 3 years, at least, maybe 4 years, like they've just kind of wasted Aaron Rodgers, wasted his prime. It's like you didn't go out there and get this man any weapons, really. You didn't go out there and get this man a good ground game, really, until who was your man last year that kind of stepped up? Aaron Jones, yeah, the other Aaron. The first legitimate running back he's had maybe in 5 years. And it's like, yeah, like on paper, Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Certainly one of the most talented. But you haven't given him anything to work with, and we've seen the results.
Yeah, he's going to be 37 this year and not getting any younger. And I think their window is – I mean, it's closing. We're getting at a point there where I don't know how much better Rodgers is going to be. And then the team around him is, I think Jones was a nice addition in the sense of he was productive last year. But we look at the receiver, it's Davante Adams and then some dudes. Like,
do they still have, is it Martez Valdez?
Marquez Valdez Scantling.
Yes.
He's still around.
Yeah, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm feeling some type of way, man. Like, how y'all going to try to Brett Favre of me? With a dude that's not as good as I was.
That's the thing. If they're drafting, I think, a prospect that was maybe higher up on the board.
If this were Herbert or somebody, like, you know, Tua.
Or even Tua.
Somebody like that.
You'd be like, look, you know what? I get it. But I think Jordan Love was not a questionable prospect, but he was not a can't miss prospect.
Yeah, he's a project.
Utah State. Yeah, he's a project.
He can be good, but he's, again, it's the Jalen Hurts argument with Philly. Like, is that really what you need to spend one of these 6 or 7 draft picks on this year?
Yeah.
So,
and I would say no. Or do you know?
So we'll see, Marcus. We actually had some NFL to talk about this week, which might not happen for a little while.
No, we have the schedule. We'll be coming out next week. Next, I think, Thursday.
A schedule full of lies. it's like a game of spades. You ain't got nothing but possibles and maybes.
Yeah, we got a bunch of clubs, bunch of low spades.
We might be able to get a game here or there, but ain't no guarantees.
And some hearts.
So, that's going to do it this week, man. Another great episode, Marcus. I'm looking forward to parts 5 and 6 of The Last Dance, especially part 5, because you done hyped it up. Now I'm ready for it.
Yeah, 5 is good.
So, we'll be talking about that next week. Who knows? We might have some more NFL news to talk about. Maybe we'll check the XFL website again and see if their prices have come down.
Yeah, we'll check back next week.
Maybe hopefully. next week will be the week I buy that Defenders jersey. Now that this stimulus check didn't hit.
Oh no.
But we'll see. So, Marcus, before we get out of here, where can the people find you on social media and maybe give you their thoughts on the NFL draft?
You can find me at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Yeah, maybe next week we'll talk about your man Wesley Berry, the other greatest athlete of the 90s, other than Michael Jordan.
I saw your tweet the other day, and I turned on Pluto. I watched a little bit of it.
Yep. I've been all about some Wesley Two Scoops Berry on the American Gladiators channel. I've been watching Gladiators, and I've been watching Star Trek Picard, because CBS All Access is free for the next month.
Oh, okay.
So I've been watching Picard, and Picard's okay, but that Wesley Two Scoops Berry, that's binge worthy. The Pluto's greatest power ball player ever.
There's something for everyone on Pluto.
Yeah. Yeah, they got like free. A Law and Order channel.
They have the Hills channel. They have
The Hills, like MTV Romance with all the dating shows from the 90s and the 2000s.
Old Nickelodeon stuff from like, you know, you can watch Guts and...
I think they still got a TNA channel on there.
Yep, they do.
The Mystery Science Theater channel. Yeah. Yeah, like Pluto's low-key a good little time waster for an hour or so.
Yes.
Just flip through and see what's on. Because that's the thing. You don't get to pick what is on. It's just like TV used to be. You just watch what's on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any control. But you can find me on Twitter in the number 8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic, where you might catch me tweeting about Wesley Berry or wrestling. Shout out to Andrew Thompson, friend of the program, who has an interview up right now with Christian from the WWE. Okay. So, shout out to the young brother out here trying to make moves during this quarantine. You can check out Rocky Mountain Theater Picture Show over at Post. The T-shirt's out now. If you want to cop one of those, go to store.postwrestling.com. Kingsport Patreon, you already know if you're watching the video. Patreon.com/KingsofSport. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the show. We'll be back next week with our continuing coverage of the Last Dance documentary, as well as more of our thoughts as we all moving through this pandemic, Marcus Vandenberg.
Yes.
So that'll do it. Thank y'all for listening. Thank you for checking out the show. Be safe. If you're going outside, wear your damn mask. Wash your hands, and we'll catch you back here next week for an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. You can come out from behind the couch now, Carmen. That's like I was doing acting there for people watching the video. Like that, there was actually a move right there, setting the scene, theater of the mind. Because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to leave it all on the mat, because that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!